So I'd like to start our reflective time together with a couple pieces of inspiration. One is a poem, and the other is a cartoon. This poem is by Jane Hirschfeld, who is a Bay Area poet who puts a lot of Dharma in her poetry. It's called Nothing Lasts. Nothing lasts. How bitterly the thought attends each loss. Nothing lasts. A promise also of consolation. Grief and hope. The skipping ropes, two ends. Twin daughters of impatience. One wears a dress of wool, the other of cotton. We'll see why that is relevant a little later. And then a cartoon. I would like holding them up, although of course you can't see it. But it gives me this illusion that I'm sharing the visual. And in this particular cartoon from The New Yorker, Humpty Dumpty is sitting on the therapist couch. And he's looking very forlorn and, you know, not put together. And the therapist is very patiently saying to him, eventually, I'd like to see you able to put yourself back together. And I chose these two pieces of inspiration because in the book that we're going to be working with this weekend, Emotional Chaos to Clarity, I cover a lot of very practical material. So, for instance, there's a whole chapter on starting your day with clarity, which I really recommend, by the way. This is now I've had, you know, hundreds of people having tried this and given me feedback, and so it's something worth doing. You can just stand in the bookstore and read the chapter. Or there's the clarity and decision making, very practical stuff. Living skillfully with the difficult. Very practical. Difficulty happens in our lives, so how do we live with that? All very practical. And then bringing mindfulness to major life decisions, which we all, sooner or later, face a number of those. And four kinds of personal defeat and how to deal with each of these kinds of personal defeat. So nothing theoretical, nothing exclusively Buddhist about it, but humanity-based, the human experience. And then overcoming ordinary compulsiveness, which is that was my alternative choice of a talk tonight, was talking on how to work with ordinary compulsiveness, which probably each person in this room has their fair share of it, huh? So in the midst of doing these kinds of very practical chapters, the first part of the book is devoted to explaining the role of mindfulness and intention in allowing us to work with these very practical aspects of life and how mindfulness and intention really empower us to live skillfully. Now, I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I have seen that this is true. That as people really understand how to live a mindful life and less familiar, live an intentional life, a lot less familiar. But with these two together, it really makes a difference in the quality of our lives in many, many instances without the actual conditions of our lives having to change. But in order to cultivate mindfulness, in order to cultivate intention, there are these two characteristics, or two character traits, if you like it that way, or two attitudes of life that you're cultivating towards life, and that is this quality or this trait of patience, and then this trait or quality of resolve. Which the fruit of resolve is persistence. That's the fruit of it, but it is I call it, I just talk about patience and persistence because I like that, the exploding peas of them. But also because resolve, as I've observed it in myself and students, resolve can be a little tricky because it can get very theoretical. I'm determined, that's the other word that's used in the formal teachings, resolve and determination. I'm really determined to do X this next year. But then what happens? We don't do X so often, right? Lose weight, not open the refrigerator door after 10 o'clock at night, not flip channels, not do another set of web browsing or answering more emails, and yet we do it and we do it. And so I've looked for this word of persistence to give a more sense of what it actually feels like, because remember, the Buddha Dharma is built around the felt sense, this direct experiencing, this direct wisdom, this intuitive knowing that's immediate in nature. So the Buddha has not really given us a philosophical system. He's given us an immediacy of system, of way to relate to this moment of conditions and this moment of mind, this very moment. It's not this concept we're to believe in. It's not a belief-based system. I would argue, and many have before me, that it's not even ontological. There's no creation story, and there's no end of time story. So it's not ontological the way most of our Western religions tend to be. And so if we're going to live the Eightfold Path, which is the fourth of the Four Noble Truths, if we're going to live the Eightfold Path in a way that brings ease to our life, that allows us to live skillfully, it turns out that patience and persistence are very, very useful in this regard. They become worthy practices in and of themselves to be developed. Each is strong in its own way, and they make a great pair together. And we'll see why in the course of our examination. So, patience is a kind of forbearance under pressure or stress or disappointment or impatience, that there is a forbearance, there's a capacity to endure what we don't want to endure. We're patient with things being other than the way we want them to be. Patient meaning, including that we will stay with, from a Buddhist perspective, that we will stay with it, we're patient with it. Not that we don't have a preference for it to be otherwise, but that we're not being controlled by our preferences. This is, again, one of these understandings that you've heard about preferences coming up in the chain of dependent origination, those of you who've got some practice experience, but not necessarily focus on, well, what does that really mean in daily life? What it really means in daily life is that if we're not careful, we live based on our preferences rather than on our values. And so patience allows us to stay with our values and stay with our goals rather than being thrown off again, as we will see. And the patience allows us to accept this moment in a particular way, and to not get caught in our expectations of how it should be. But, oh, it's like this. So just as in the meditation, feeling the body is like this. Aching knee is like this. Patience is willing to be with that aching knee and not have to do something about it. It's willing to endure it just as it is. Determination or resolve, which the fruit of which is persistence, is this continuity of effort. It is maintaining the focus of effort. It is an unswerving commitment to whatever it is that you have committed to. Not by unswerving meaning as long as it seems wholesome and appropriate and skillful means are being used towards that end. Because we learn as we go, and sometimes we learn, oh, this isn't that important, this isn't worthy of this, or this isn't a good use of my time, or this was not a genuine possibility, so we change, but based on what we learn. But at the same time, as we find this continuing to be worthwhile to pursue, this persistence allows us to pursue it even if there's very little reward that's immediate. So this postponement of gratification, postponement of encouragement, this persistence is able to persist in the face of non-encouragement in that way. And it is also able to return to the commitment when it's gotten knocked off, when you've just quit on yourself. Oh, quit on myself. Start again. We learn persistence in practice by this phrase that you've heard, those of you who've had instructions, by this phrase of starting over. Starting over is such a huge part of practice, and it is so empowering to our being able to do anything in life. Because once we get used to just starting over, it's not such a big deal to be knocked off center, to have a defeat. We just start over. We just start over. That's persistence, that's starting over. Starting where we are is patience. One of the things that I have discovered in these years of teaching is that one of the difficulties is that so often yogis do not want to start, or don't realize they need, or don't understand they're not starting where they are. So I use this example that to every single person has complained about, so therefore I keep using it. If it's that bad of an example, there must be something good in it. And that is that if you're sitting here in this side of the room, to my left, And I say, okay, the evening's over. Would you please get up from a chair on the right-hand side? Could you do that? Seems obviously true that you can't. But a kind of tautology that you can't. If you're sitting on the left side of the room, you cannot get up from the right side of the room. And yet, when we practice, we often do that. We start with this idea of who should be practicing rather than who is practicing. And it doesn't work out so well, you know, because the person who should be practicing isn't present. There isn't someone like that. That's just a concept. It's a notion, a longing in the head. Likewise, if you're sitting on the right side of the room and I say, will you please make your first movement of standing up from somewhere on my left? Not possible, not possible. So the patience allows us to bear starting where we are. When you can start where you are, you're not inhibited in the same way. You're not intimidated. If you get knocked off and you're just going to start again, you become a person to be reckoned with. Because you're always willing to start where you are, and you're willing to go for it over and over again. Whether it's something in your daily life, whether it's a relationship, whether it's an internal experience. And my interest is in the internal experience. But I have found that this works so well in terms of helping people with the external experience, that when in the context of seeing the external experience as dharma, that it actually, there's not really an inherent conflict at all. So these two qualities or characteristics of patience and resolve are part of what's called the paramis. And the paramis, this is a little, bear with me here for a moment, it gets a little theoretical for a moment. The paramis are these 10 qualities that we are taught by the tradition that are to be cultivated in order for us to walk the Eightfold Path, in order for us to practice the four foundations of mindfulness, for us to be able to cultivate the seven factors of enlightenment, and so on and so forth. These paramis, these attitudes towards life, or qualities of mind-heart, if you like that phrase, they both are natural to us in our Buddha nature. That is the bodhicitta in us, that bodhicitta quality that is everywhere. It naturally has these qualities, but they're also to be cultivated. As they mature, they may start out as an attitude, an aspiration, a value, but not something actual manifested into actual characterizing us. They become our character traits. You become a person of patience. You become a person of persistence. Just as you learn to become, as you mature in your practice, a person of compassion, a person of loving kindness. The transformations are real. They are here and now, but they unfold in their own time frame. But they are here and now in this way. This becoming is a genuine experience for us. I'm just going to quickly name all 10 of these, because patience and persistence or resolve are supported by each of these, some more than others. And just for those of you who've never heard a talk on the paramis before, just so you know these, don't try to hold on to any of this tonight about these 10 as a whole. It starts with generosity, which is called dana, as was mentioned earlier. The second is virtue, or sila in Pali. The third is renunciation, or nikama, this power of renunciation. And for those of you who are going to be with me all weekend, renunciation is going to come back around. And we certainly need patience and persistence in relation to cultivating this character of renunciation, to have a character trait that has got a capacity of renunciation. So very important. Wisdom, panya. Those of you who've been on retreats, you may have heard of satipanya, this mindful wisdom, satipanya. And then energy, virya. You start to see what a person you would be if you had all of these, right? And then patience, kanti, truthfulness, sakka, determination, of this resolve, persistence, adhidhana, loving kindness, metta, and equanimity, upeka. And each of these qualities can be cultivated on their own. They can be cultivated as pairs or triads. And as we develop one, we end up starting to develop the other, and we start to see how we need. It's very hard to have wisdom if we lack virtue. It's very hard to have patience if we don't have any energy, and so forth. So we start to see they really fit together. Maybe some weekend that's what I'll do up here, is all 10 of these, if you would like. One little piece for you. The Buddha didn't actually teach in a sutta these 10 paramis. They were pulled out by his followers and made into a list. And like the Tibetans only have 6 of them, they don't have 10. So either we Theravadins are more need of help, or we've got loftier goals. Suit yourself. For me, I look at this whole question of character, which it can be revolutionary to realize that you can affect your character. Like, really? Yeah, because it's oftentimes from early childhood, people assign us certain character traits, or we've acted at one point and then everybody glums on that as that's our identity. And so we don't really get the chance to experiment and grow and get, see what's really possible. And the Dharma so invites that in us. So we can see them as developmentally oriented, that in developing the paramis, it's a developmental process, but also as we develop the paramis, we develop into a mature person that does not cause harm. Those character traits, when they're all matured together, they don't cause harm. They also, it's said in the teachings that it requires all of them to be mature for you to become an arahant. Without there being a full development, that full enlightenment cannot occur. So see it developmentally. You can also see it, and I would encourage you to think this way, as a way that in response to suffering, it gives us a chance to develop these wonderful character traits. If we didn't suffer, why would we bother? If there was no suffering when there was no sila, why would we bother to have virtue? If we didn't suffer because of a lack of generosity, when we're selfish and scheming to get more, if there was no suffering in that, why would we ever develop generosity? If our impatience, everything would come just as soon as we were impatient and we wanted something, it changed. How would we and why would we ever develop patience? So there is a meaning to our suffering because the suffering invites this opportunity. It lifts suffering up. Those of you who've read Dancing with Life, which is a description in great detail of the 12 insights of the Four Noble Truths, it is the first noble truth. What makes it noble is this ability to stand under, to stay present with suffering. It is ennobling. If I had the book to do over, I would have described the Four Noble Truths throughout as the four ennobling truths. It's more accurate in relation to a Pali language. I just didn't have the nerve to do it at the time. I refer to it in there, but I didn't have the nerve because no other Westerner had done it, and I just didn't. This question was like, who am I to be saying it that way? But for you to understand even here that, oh, so suffering, if it's in relation to becoming more of who I would wish to be, it automatically is redeemed from its meaninglessness. That's very encouraging given how difficult life is. Because we get so many opportunities to practice with suffering. And then the third way of understanding it is that it is that we are moving towards each of these paramis, in this instance tonight, only focusing on the two of patience and persistence, as a kind of offering, a kind of surrender to the Dharma. If nothing else, I'm developing some patience. I'm sitting here on a 10-day retreat or a 3-month retreat. My mind's not being still for one moment. You know, my body hurts. I'm judging all the teachers, da 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 da. But still, I'm sitting here. So there's some amount of patience being developed. There's some amount of persistence because I'm here. So I'm somehow, something positive is happening. There seem some more blank faces on this one. A lot of times we fail to be who we would aspire to be. If we stay present for that experience, we go, oh, this is as best I am able in this moment. The surrender, the humility, the humbleness of being to simply doing as best we can, mindfully, being mindful that we are doing the best we can in a mindful way, then there is something that's quite wholesome in that itself, that is capturing some aspect of the surrendering that's inherent if you're going to do the Dharma. It is said that if we will just show up, the Dharma will do us. That's what I'm getting at with this third one. That we are at least showing up. We're surrendering. This is all I can do. So Dharma, do with me as you will. I'm not demanding that the conditions be otherwise to practice. And by that, I mean the conditions otherwise in relation to any aspect of your life, in daily life, and then on retreat. When I say not demanding, that doesn't mean that you would ever give up goals. It's not saying that. It doesn't mean that you have to give up your preferences and small things. It's just this changing of relationship, as we will be looking at a lot in the retreat. So that's the kind of context here. And then I'm just going to take you through certain pieces of this, of each of these two, a little dropping in. I refer to it as circumambulating a subject. Like if you go to the Mahabodhi temple in India, where the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree, we always walk around the temple with our right shoulder in towards the temple. But there's a circumambulating, and I view our practice time when we're reflecting and sitting and doing all the different things as a kind of spiraling down deep into the subject. So we're circulating around it so that we see it from different angles. And if we don't move and we just keep one perspective, keep looking at it one way, it often turns out that we don't develop very quickly. But if we move around and we're sitting in this perspective and that perspective, it's really valuable. That's one of the wonderful things about having a number of different teachers who hold different perspectives. It allows us to have fresh thoughts about a subject that we may have heard 50 times or 100 times or 200 times. So here we are spiraling around patience and persistence. Patience is not just waiting for what you want to happen. It's not got that attitude to it. It is willing to be with what is without any assurance you're going to get what you want. Stand you up straight, huh? It is this forbearance under disappointment, defeat, confusion, it being lost. It has this quality of energetic endurance. So it's not a collapsed, although we may in a moment be collapsed, but the feeling of it in its mature form is energetic. That's why energy, the parami of energy, becomes important. There's an energetic to the endurance. I can sometimes seem as though I'm being overly technical or maybe too much subtlety, but these are actual clues for you living your life. And that's why I do them. I don't, I'm not just being, slicing it up for entertainment purposes. For you to have one moment's thought, oh, patience is energetic endurance. I've never thought that once. You have planted a seed in that moment. And there will come a time when the conditions are right where in your life, when you need patience, you will go, oh, energetic endurance. You've already suggested the cultivation of something to yourself. It is a willing to be with the willingness to be with failure in its mature form. It's a willingness to start over, as I said. It is willing to be with what's unpleasant and unjust. Patience in its mature form is not restless, even with restlessness. So that you may be experiencing restlessness, but you're not restless over the restlessness. That's, again, reassuring if you were just open to that. It can even be patient with impatience, this patience quality. The sense of patience is not a long-suffering feeling. Oh, you know, we've all known those people, the long-suffering types. Some of us in the room may be that, where others have to listen and feel how we are so identified with our being long-suffering. You may work with someone like that who needs to tell you at least once a week how long-suffering. You may have had a mother like that. So it's not long-suffering. That is not what's being pointed to. It is imbued with generosity, with sila, with renunciation. And it's also imbued with the wisdom and all. It has, in its own way, a neutrality, because it's not demanding that it be things be otherwise. So it's neutral as to what is. In the higher jhana states, this is really felt. Those deep absorption states, this where the neither pleasant nor unpleasant, that really gets revealed in a much more profound way. That's not our subject tonight. Patience can handle cognitive dissonance from your psychology courses. Cognitive dissonance is two things that are in conflict with each other, and your mind, the untrained mind, doesn't like that. The opposites that Jung called them, the mind doesn't like that. But with patience, we can handle cognitive dissonance. This is the way it is, and I don't want it to be this way, but it's like this, but I don't want it to be this way, and it's not a conflict. It's not a conflict. The ordinary mind has to run away from that. It either goes into fantasy or thinks about something else or collapses into self-loathing or projection of blame on others. It has to do something with it. But a mind that's mature in this patience can just stay there with cognitive dissonance. Very useful in daily life. Resolve or determination or persistence is of a different nature. It's imbued with the wisdom. It requires a wisdom that knows where you're wanting to go. And therefore, as you cultivate wisdom, you trust where you want to go, and that gives you the motivation for persistence. In the paperback version of Dancing with Life, I added, not skillfully, because I should have put it somewhere else, but things happen. An appendix on the suffering of ambivalence and ambiguity. And this is in our society, we have tremendous amounts of ambivalence and ambiguity. And there ended up being hundreds of groups that studied Dancing with Life, and I ended up interacting with quite a few of the leaders of them and so forth. And one of the things that really came out, and that's how this ended up in this book, is the amount of ambivalence and ambiguity that people have to deal with, and oftentimes not recognized or don't even know the difference between ambivalence and ambiguity. So that's, I talk about that. So the wisdom, it's very hard to persist if we've developed a lot of ambivalence. Comes up a lot in practice. How committed am I to practice? Am I getting anywhere? There's all these different things, including lack of patience, that cause ambivalence. And then with ambiguity, well, what do I really want out of this practice? What do I want out of my life? And so forth. So for persistence to be strong, there needs to be some degree of clarity in that way. And it has this unswervingness, as I've said, and it 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 too requires energy, but its energy is of a very if it's not balanced with patience, the energy has a kind of restlessness to it. It has a kind of irritation to it that oftentimes persistence without patience is self-defeating. Others don't want to help you. Others think that you're wanting too much and so forth. So you see the various ways it works. So patience, it softens and calms persistence. Patience is the yin to the yang of persistence. And therefore, we're balancing, just as though we were doing some sort of kundalini practice, we're balancing these two energies, this yin and yang energy of the mind. Patience relieves and protects the nervous system from that overzealousness of our persistence, which is coming from our wanting. And patience allows us to not get caught up and upset with ourselves when persistence is not yielding progress. Because we can really turn our frustration on ourselves. I'm sure everybody in this room has done that in their life at least once. Patience allows you to tolerate how hard or slow spiritual growth is, working with something difficult in your relationship, the lack of relationship, trying to resolve whether you want a relationship, trying to resolve something with your children or whether you want children. Patience allows this wanting it to get resolved to be balanced. Oh, it'll get resolved when it gets resolved. So external patience is when we're patient with others and external conditions. That's the external aspect of it. The internal aspect of patience is being patient with ourselves. We can be patient with others, but not patient with ourselves. Or we can be patient with ourselves and not patient with others. Or be patient with neither, or ideally with both. And lots of times there's some denial about how we are in that. And it's interesting to use the mindfulness to recognize this without judging, comparing, or fixing. When I said earlier, it's fine to be patiently impatient because the impatience is what's true. So right now I'm feeling impatience. And it's so I'll be patient till this too will pass. And I just wait. I don't demand that I suddenly become patient. It's not so useful to be impatiently patient, where what you're showing the form is, oh, this is such a patient person. Oh, it's so great to work with this person at the hospital or in the office because they're so patient. You know, they're always so patient. But inside they're going crazy because they're so impatient. That's not so good for the system, in my observation of people. It's too much cognitive dissonance. It's too there's a suppression that's not so helpful. However, as we're learning to be patient, there's lots of times when we have to fake it till we make it. So we aspire, but we're mindfully. We know that we're not really patient. We're just practicing being patient. Right? I'm practicing being patient. It's one of the paramis, so here I am practicing it. That's different than telling yourself what a patient person I am or selling yourself as a patient person. That's different. So, there we go. Just as patience supports determination and persistence, so persistence supports patience. Patience, if you're a patient person, but you haven't cultivated this parami of resolve, determination, having persistence, you never get there. If it's a steep hill, you never get there. If there's a number of humps in terms of what you're trying to do, this shows up all the time on retreat. This is a retreat kind of talk I'm giving you this evening. It shows up all the time. People don't have enough resolve. They don't persist in staying with the breath long enough to learn how to stay with the breath. They give up way too easy. They don't they're too patient with themselves. And there's always this challenge we have of helping people balance that. By we, I mean the people who happen to be teaching that retreat. Patience without persistence can go into that long suffering, because it gets used to it. It becomes its identity, and it's sort of a pat on the back. So we're finding the balance. If we don't have enough patience, their persistence will drain our energy. It will cause us to have bad timing. It will cause us to fall into violent thoughts or speech or activities. So we do need both. When we're living our lives, patience allows mistakes to occur and to forgive. This capacity that is also taught so much in the Dharma of forgiveness. To be patient, you have to be willing to forgive yourself and others. Because if you keep judging them, then you just can't find the patience in that way. Persistence tries again. So one way to think about it is that patience helps us overcome reactive mind, whereas persistence helps us meet resistance of the mind. I don't want to do this again. I don't want to go practice those scales one more day. I don't want to do this. I don't want to practice this particular yoga pose that I don't do very well. I don't want to go try to do this part of the project that's critical to my job that I've danced around and had others do for me. That's the resistance to learning it. It's the resistance to doing what's necessary to be fully competent in our work. That's the resistance. Persistence overcomes that resistance. Patience allows us to be with all of the reactive mind as we're doing it. There's someone I work with right now that's a life balance client who's been very successful in life, but has done so because they're very clever to a certain degree, and they've come to really have sort of an active dislike of their own cleverness. And one of that cleverness has been in the service of getting others to do what they can't do without ever acknowledging that the others are doing their part of the work. We're doing a lot of work in this area right now. And what this person wants is a sense of wholeness. They want to feel authentic to themselves. That's how they ended up my door. It's because they weren't looking to be more successful. I don't help people do that in the life balance work. I help them do a strategic analysis of their life based on their values. Why doesn't their life feel better? How come there's not some deeper sense of satisfaction, of meaning, of authenticity? And these things are, I've seen these things that we're examining tonight show up in that way. Fierce determination may win you a battle. And so it's not that there's never a place for fierce determination, but it does not win wars. Patient persistence wins wars. Whether it's losing weight, taking your medicine in a persistent way if you've got a health problem, having to deal with the medical system over a long period of time because of your child, or a friend, or your significant other. Patience, persistence wins the war. A fierce determination can get the insurance company maybe to do what, to cover something or to get the attention paid right now when the person's in the hospital. But in my experience, it does not win the war in this way. Skip that part because I want to have time for questions here. In our lives, through mindfulness, we can start to see what our relationship is to each of these. And one of the things we discover that we sometimes can think that we're just being persistent, when in fact it's a kind of demanding impatience that we're causing suffering, at least to others, and often to ourselves as well. So it seems like, no, I'm just really trying to, I care about this, this is right that I care about it, and I'm just being persistent. But there's really a kind of obnoxiousness, a self-centeredness, a taking birth, a clinging, an attachment in that. So it's really a demanding impatience. It's not patient persistence. It's a demanding impatience. I've seen a lot of that. And again, it can work for a while. But sustainability, which is a big interest of mine, sustainability in a human being, I don't know. You can think for yourself about that. And it can be just you as a mom or a dad. It can be you at your job. It can be you as a leader. It can be in relation to your meditation practice. Just to be very interested in what is the quality of this experience. Is it genuine, or patience and persistence together, or is it a demanding impatience? Am I really clinging to the result in such a way that I'm not really changing as a person? I'm not developing. I'm just getting what I want. Likewise, there are times in our lives when we have, and some of us may well have, a habit of rationalizing our lack of courageous persistence, because persistence takes courage, because we get defeated a lot. And we say, oh, I'm just being patient. But in truth, it's a lack of determination. You know? And we rationalize this for ourselves. And we, particularly coming from the mindfulness world, coming from the Buddhist practice, there, this being forever patient can seem like, well, it's got to be good, because that's so Buddhist. But in fact, that is not what we're doing. There is a lack of courage. There's a lack of commitment to our actions. And therefore, there's a kind of clinging that's not being recognized in that. The last thing I'll say about this is that it's easy to get confused between our values of patience and persistence with winning. You know, in Western culture, winning is, you know, the Vince Lombardi thing about winning's everything, you know. It's so easy to start measuring our lives by winning on the highway, beating the traffic, winning a parking space, you know, winning being the person that people want to sit next to at lunch, you know, that we can so easily have absorbed this perspective, which is not worthless, but to be letting our lives being defined by it, to me, that does lead to emotional chaos and does not have clarity in it. But just to be aware for yourself and seeing how that fits with you. And then end, I'd like to do, I hope, another poem. I'm not seeing it here. And then, here it is. And then, again, one cartoon, which I'll start with in this instance. This is a person who's wanting someone else to carry their patience and persistence for them. This middle-aged man is saying to this person who's in some sort of relationship he's with, if you can just help me through the tough times, I can handle it from there. We all need help through the tough times, but that's when we're not owning You see, there's not owning. You help me be patient. You help me be persistent. And then I'll handle it on my own. Then I'll take birth in this empowered person and lose the sense of interdependence. That was, in fact, what allowed me to reach this. Again, something that happens a lot. So one poem here for you. It's a poem by Kay Ryan, who's a former poet laureate. It's called Why We Must Struggle. If we have not struggled as hard as we can at our strongest, how will we sense the shape of our losses, or know what sustains us longest, or name what change costs us? Saying how strange it is that one sector of the self can step in for another in trouble, how loss activates a latent double, how we can feed as upon nectar upon need. So this is for we Buddhist dukkha experiencers. Why we have dukkha? Like again, what I was saying earlier. If we have not struggled as hard as we can at our strongest, if we haven't been present for the dukkha in our lives that we both are just happen to be recipients of and that we're causing, how will we sense the shape of our losses? How do we ever understand that the idea is to change our relationship to dukkha? That there is a liberation in daily life and in the long term? Or how do we know what sustains us, that there's some other part of us can come forward? It is so worthy this practice of mindfulness, of compassion, of compassionate mindfulness, of loving kindness, of equanimity, of patience and persistence. It is so worthy because it does allow us both to know ourselves, to know our capacities, and to bring out the very best of those capacities. In that way, the emotional chaos of our lives becomes our teacher. We're not trying to get rid of all the emotional chaos in our lives. Our aspiration is to have a new relationship with it. So here we are, patience and persistence. Any questions or comments that anyone would like to make? Sometimes when I come here, there's a lot of questions or comments, and sometimes almost none, and I've never found the rhyme nor reason for it. So would someone start us out, please? Yes, please. I will point you to someone as soon as I have to choose between these many raised hands. Yes, so we can be impatient. We can be impatient with how bad it is. This is never going to end. Or we can be being impatient. This will pass. This will pass, but we're not really being with it either way. So I'll go back and read it again if I can quickly find it. Nothing lasts. How bitterly the thought attends each loss. Nothing lasts. A promise also of consolation, grief and hope, the skipping ropes, two ends, twin daughters of impatience. So that's what's the trickiness of all of this, you know. We're not really being patient. Nothing lasts. I can just bear all this. But we're not really bearing it. We're not really staying present. This won't go on forever, so I'll just go off into dreamland for a while.
We succumb
to the neurosis of our culture, yes. We don't balance it. We become a perpetrator of the very thing that we then complain about. I, who have my own attractions to speed, let me be very clear about owning that. This is a work in progress, not a finished product. Please, back there, and then we'll come down front afterwards.
So you mentioned energy and patience being related. So what do you do when you're out of energy?
You know, when in our culture, we have a big problem with that, of people running out of energy. There's a respite is, when it's possible, is what's the most desirable place to begin again. But sometimes we can't have that respite, because these conditions are that they stay, and we feel responsible for those conditions. We got to earn a living, take care of our elderly mother or father, and get our children through college or whatever it is. And so we sometimes have to do it more internally rather than externally, and we have to take small little breaks of rest. I teach, I don't have time to do this now, but I teach a 3-second, 30-second, and 3-minute and 30-minute interrupt, so that in the course of a day you develop these periods that may be 3 seconds in length mostly, but some 30 seconds, some 3 minute, and one 30-minute interrupt in your day. And those are the renewal points in the day. And as we do that, that can make a difference in terms of getting the energy to go. Body awareness, loving kindness, compassion, all of the Brahma-Vihara practices are inherently restful. Mindfulness sees where we're pushing and pulling at the experience. Even though we may be having to spend the hours, we don't have to push and pull. We just rest back in the patience and persistence. And that mindfulness in that way sees where we're draining and wasting our energy. Even though we're required to do a certain amount of energy, we're doing a lot more. It's what's called parasitic movement, or parasitic energy that's getting called into something. So those are a few things. But first, with this mindfulness, owning it, and asking ourselves, why are we getting out of this, doing this to ourselves? What choices do we have here? What else is possible? Or what are we believing? What are we believing in this moment? Rich, rich topic. Down here front, and we'll end with this one.
A few moments ago, you alluded to interdependence. Would you say more for the relationship between patience and persistence and interdependence, or even codependence and independence?
Well, codependence is a whole other matter. The interdependence is a rich teaching in the Buddhist tradition, and it has to do with co-arising, and that we're not separate. There is an illusion of separateness that is not there. And Thich Nhat Hanh has a very wonderful teaching on that, interdependence, and how just how pervasive it is. The value of seeing the interdependence is that at many times we can find comfort, if we will but be aware of this, that, well, I may not be doing much that I'm getting out of this for myself, that my life's not turned out in this area as I would have it be at all. But if I act in this way, I am allowing others to have in this area. Not as long suffering, but as, I wanted to have children, I don't have children. But I can create an environment that is, I can be a person, I can support in a way that is bringing happiness or possibility to all children. Or in work, I'm not able to be the star that I wanted to be, but I can be a great team player. Or if you are the star, I want and I must give credit and share the reward, because although I'm the star, it's really all of us. It's really the truth that it's all of us. It's just clearly the truth. If I think about it for a moment, if that person didn't do what they agreed to do, yes, a number of different people could do it, but some person had to do it, and this person had to do that. And I too, even though I'm the star, I'm just doing this part. So this kind of seeing this, and this is part of this metta feeling, and this, but it's from a Buddhist point of view, it's seen as the actuality of it, and it starts to break up the solidness of the I in a certain way. Again, a very rich topic we could do. So thank each of you for your questions. We're going to take a moment to dedicate the merit this evening. So just come back into the body. Feel the body in the room now. And for just a second, touch into that area beneath the belly button. And imagine that it has given you access to your intuition. What does the intuitive body know about these topics in you? And what would the intuitive body have you know? Shift attention to the heart center. What's true in your heart? What would the heart center have you know about patience and persistence in your life as opportunity, as dukkha? And then shift to the head center where all the views and opinions, all the chattering voices are. What's true in the head center? What does the head center want you to know about patience and persistence? And as we come to understand, to be mindful of the importance of these paramis of patience and resolve, and as we cultivate them and the fruits start to come, may this fruit be a benefit to our loved ones, be a benefit to all of those with whom we come in contact. And may any merit of our practice this evening and of all of our practice with patience and persistence, may this merit be shared with all beings. We mindfully and freely offer our merit to the benefit of all others without preference, without discrimination, without hesitation or limitation. May all beings everywhere, those near, those far, known, unknown, seen, unseen, all beings of all types be the beneficiary of this merit in such a way that we contribute in some small or large way to the end of their own suffering. Thank you for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be with you.